Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show we don't take calls. It's the show wherein we take no calls. And all of that. But we do celebrate the Resurrection Sunday. Welcome to everyone. Well, it's just a beautiful day to be alive and to remember the resurrection of Jesus Christ on a day when even the liberals give lip service. Well, less and less anymore. Now they're trying to bust up church services. Go to the widespread tyranny file. Breitbart reports that Pastor Artur Bulowski had to order 6 police officers out of his church. That's right. I'll link to the video. It's inspirational. He confronted the police there in Alberta, Canada. And he threw him out of his church, called him Gestapo, Nazi, Communist, Fascists. And then he asked them to leave. And he told them not to come back without a warrant. He said they were intimidating people in a church during the Passover. And the police had no shame about it. And this is going on all over the world, over in Great Britain, the formerly Great Britain. Officers busted up another Polish church service. They told everyone to get out of the church or they would be fined £200. And what did the parishioners do? They left. They ran away. They obeyed the order of the Nazi. What did Pastor Pulowski call them here? I think that's very appropriate here. Gestapo, Nazi, Communist, Fascist. I like that. Very apt. And the cringing, cowardly Polish Christians in London scurried out of the church because they were afraid of being fined £200. And now here's what I wanted to get to, because this is the part that makes me uncomfortable. Breitbart reports that these types of incidents involving police cause considerable anger among conservatives who traditionally back the police. And we do. We traditionally back the police. And now the psychopaths who've toppled civilization have found a fairly effective mechanism for wedging us against the police. Us conservatives who normally support the police. They're going to sick the police on our churches. They're going to break us away from the police. We know that the communist leftists and the Black Lives Matter and all of, we know they hate the police, the Antifa, all of them. Now they're going to get us up against the police, and then it doesn't look good, that's all. I mean, I'm naturally pessimistic, but I'm even more so right now. But don't worry, Doug, everything's going back to normal. Everything's going back to normal. It's going to be fine. Everything's, where do I want to go? I don't know what I want to do. Do we cover the shootings? Do we cover the police killings, the thefts, the beatings? Let's start with C.S. Lewis, just because this is good quality writing, and that could help to put me in a good mood, to put me in the right frame of mind to do a great show. That's what I'm hoping. This is from the Modern Day Prophecy File, where C.S. Lewis, according to Town Hall, practically predicted the woke movement that's happening right now. And you know, wokeism. That is when you are a racist about everything all the time. Or a sexist. Or a homosexualist. Or a transgenderist about everything all the time. Those things all the time. Anyway, C.S. Lewis wrote in his book, The Screwtape Letters, he wrote, quote, "We now have an intelligentsia which, though very small, is very useful to the cause of hell." Mm-hmm. Unquote. Pretty good. Now that's just good writing. So Lewis's book, The Screwtape Letters, is a series of messages from senior devil Screwtape to his protege Wormwood on how to best corrupt the world and mortals, human beings. The book was originally released during World War II. An addendum released shortly before the author's death in 1963, called Screwtape Proposes a Toast, finds Lewis pivoting from dispensing universal wisdom to directly criticizing social trends of his day, 1963. Trends which have gone from mere whispers on college campuses 60 years ago to become orthodoxy with the power of law today. Reading Lewis's addendum today feels like the author was more of a prophet than merely a professor, says the author at townhall.com. And here are a few excerpts. Screwtape tells his fellow devils, "Democracy is the word with which you must lead them by the nose. The basic principle of the new education is to be that dunces and idlers must not be made to feel inferior to intelligent and industrious pupils. That would be undemocratic," says the devil. At universities, examinations must be framed so that nearly all the students get good marks. Entrance examinations must be framed so that all, or nearly all, citizens can go to universities, whether they have any power or wish to profit by higher education or not. Screwtape all but uses the word triggered, by the way, to describe children in self-esteem first, outcome last schools. He says, quote, "Children who are fit to proceed to higher class may be artificially kept back because the others would get a trauma." Beelzebub, what a useful word. "They may be traumatized by being left behind," says the devil. "For democracy, or the democratic spirit, diabolical sense, leads to a nation without great men, a nation mainly of subliterates, full of the cocksureness which flattery breeds on ignorance, and quick to snarl or whimper at the first sign of criticism. And that is what hell wishes every democratic people to be. For when such a nation meets in conflict, a nation where children have been made to work at school, where talent is placed in high posts, and where the ignorant mass are allowed no say at all in public affairs, only one result is possible." And then, unquote. Lewis leaves it to our imagination. Well, we don't have to imagine any longer. We can just watch what is happening as a nation of subliterate dunces obsess about pronouns, while the children who will conquer them in the not-too-distant future are raised up and trained to do just that. In fact, where is that? Let me go. Let me go to... let's see. I'm not sure I can find it. It's so deep. Here it is. The Elephant in the Room. An interesting article from andmagazine.com, which I highly recommend. The authors there write, this is from the Marxist Takedown of America file. The authors write, "Never before in American history have we had a president and an administration seemingly so compromised by a hostile foreign power. Joe Biden, we know that Hunter Biden exchanged access to Joe to communist China for money and whatever else. Tony Blinken, our Secretary of State, he most recently ran a pro-Chinese institute at the University of Pennsylvania. Jake Sullivan, National Security Advisor, he returned to federal service from a stint with another CCP Institute, you know, the Confucius Institutes. This one was at Yale. Marty Walsh, Labor Secretary, as mayor of Boston flew the Chinese flag in front of City Hall. Deb Haaland, Interior Secretary, has a long association with the Communist Party of the USA, which, by the way, is friendly with the Chinese Communist Party, surprisingly enough. Linda Thomas Greenfield, Biden's ambassador to the United Nations, is on record praising China's helpful actions in Africa. And the list goes on and on and on and on. And we're told, the author at AND says, never mind the elephant in the room. We are being admonished to watch out for Vladimir Putin, who's the real danger. Meanwhile, in the outright treason file, the NationalPulse.com reports that a 2017 report effectively claims on the CCP's behalf that CNN host Fareed Zakaria, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey, Facebook Oversight Board member Helle Thorning-Schmidt, and others actively cooperate with the Chinese Communist Party. An unearthed media communique entitled Holding High the Banner of Party Media and Fulfilling Its Duties and Missions appears on the Cyberspace Administration of China website. That's the CAC, that's the Chinese Communist Party's website. And they have a report on how well they're doing manipulating the Western media. The Chinese Communist Party's Cyberspace Administration engages in online propaganda and public opinion work, unquote. That's according to their website. The April 19th, 2016 speech that was unearthed discussed the spiritual garden of cyberspace, with Chairman Xi insisting that China strengthen governance in cyberspace according to their law. Foster positive, healthy, upward, benevolent, socialist core value views. The CAC proclaims over 10,000 propaganda pieces and brags of their work with Western think tanks.
Through a think tank such as Berggruen Institute and United States and the Canadian Center for International Governance Innovation, the Australian Rory Institute, we have attracted nearly 200 overseas think tankers as special commentator on China daily. In 1 year, it published more than 300 of their signed articles to influence more overseas audiences to tell China's story very well.
Unquote. That was the act, yeah. The names, would you like to know the names that are associated with the... Cyberspace Administration of China. Former Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, Gordon Brown. Twitter CEO, Jack Dorsey. Ariana Huffington. Pierre Omidyar. I don't even know who that is. Kevin Rudd. Nicolas Sarkozy. Former French President. Former Google CEO, Eric Schmidt. Former U.S. Treasury Secretary, Larry Summers. And then the aforementioned Fareed Zakaria. The only one that was obvious to me was Fareed Zakaria and the guy with the nose ring over there and the messy hair over at Twitter. Those were the only ones that were obvious to me. Google CEO, maybe. So there we have it. Our generation of subliterate idlers will be bested in short order by the Chinese communists. There will just be a small remnant of homeschooled American children who may be able to stand up against the conquest of our nation by the powers that have taken her down just here in the past year. They've taken her down. I should just say they've taken her down lower than she's been taken before. That's all. Because she's been being knocked down a peg or two every year of my life. Going back into the 1960s, as far as I'm aware. And now she's barely, and when I say she, I'm talking about America, that ideal of America that we all hold in our mind. truth, justice, and the American way. Liberty, right? Freedom and justice for all. All that good stuff that used to be in the comic books. Back when, you know, when the kids could read. Don't give up. Back. Things are going back to normal. Don't worry. Everything's going to be fine, say all of the medical professionals that I work with. I've worked in and around something like medicine for about 20 years. And it's been astonishing to me to watch the medical professionals, who I at one time had some amount of respect for, utterly cast off everything they ever knew about medicine and join the cult of COVID. It's just been bizarre. But now they're telling me everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to go back to normal. Don't worry. And we do have some evidence that things are going back to normal. We have more mass shootings. More mass murders, yes. The King Supers in Boulder. 10 people slaughtered by Ahmad al-Aliwi Alisa. The one who shall not be named, by the way. Have you noticed? He shall not be named. And now to his defense attorneys have requested a 3-month delay in his trial so that they can look into his mental illness. And what are the odds that a judge will grant that 3-month delay? Well, they're about 100%, approximately. as of this past Friday, when I downloaded this from the New York Post, police were still processing the King Supers grocery store crime scene. So they're processing the crime scene for a week. Meanwhile, we have actual video of the actual guy actually shooting and killing people. We have it on videotape. We also have hundreds of witnesses who saw this actual guy actually shooting and killing people. We also have the testimony of the actual police who actually shot and captured the guy while they watched him shooting and killing people. So we have all of that. This trial should have lasted about 3 hours, as long as it took for all of these people to stand up and say that guy did it. This guy should have been put to death before supper on the day he killed all these people. But they were still processing the scene, and now there'll be a 3-month delay so they can look into his mental state, and then he'll be given a professorship at Cornell. Who knows? All right. Is that too pessimistic, maybe? I don't know. I really don't know. Meanwhile, from the Domestic Tranquility File, the Washington Examiner reports on a shooting that has left 4 dead. A shooting. What was that shooting's name? What did he look like? Can we track him down? The shooting left 4 dead, including a child. This one barely made the news. A 9-year-old boy shot and killed along with 3 other people last Wednesday at an office building in Southern California, the city of Orange, near L.A. Around 5:30 in the evening, someone just decided to start slaughtering people. The suspect is 44-year-old Aminadab Gayola Gonzalez. And all the people he shot, he knew them and he wanted to kill them, and so he did so. Authorities say that gunfire erupted around 5:30, but the situation stabilized by 7 p.m. Apparently, after Aminadab had killed everyone he wanted to kill, the situation stabilized. The shooting was the worst in the city, right? Since December of 1997. That was, I don't know if you remember that. A Caltrans worker killed four people that he wanted to kill at his place of work there. So things are returning back to the normal levels of the 1990s with the mass slaughters and all of that. Gavin Newsom called these most recent killings horrifying and heartbreaking, said Gavin Newsom, one of the men directly responsible for this act. Yeah, you're directly responsible, yes, because he's the governor. And so when there is bloodshed on your watch in your state, governor, you are responsible. And you're derelict in your duty as you are, Mr. Newsom. You are responsible. Gavin Newsom reminds us that his hearts are with the families impacted. And then what do we have? Representative Katie, a California Democrat, she wrote on Twitter that she was deeply saddened. I'm deeply saddened. These people should all be cast into the sea for malfeasance in their governance of the state. And the intolerable level of bloodshed that they seem completely capable of tolerating, they just shed a crocodile tear here and there and remind us. Now we go into the urinalism file for probably the most horrifying story of the week. If you had a chance to see the video, just in Washington, D.C., two girls, a 13-year-old and a 15-year-old, used a taser on an Uber Eats driver and then attempted to steal his car. And they drove away with him hanging on to his car. And the video is horrifying to watch as the man is hanging on to the open door and the girls drive the car into a lamppost. And then it goes off camera, and then the man was eventually launched from the car. The girls who stole the car do nothing to help the man, along with everyone else in the frame, including National Guardsmen. Nobody seems to care that there's a guy laying, dying on the sidewalk. Shocking. A horrifying. A 13 and a 15-year-old girl. She probably got great grades in school. Probably doing well at their school. I mean, distance learning has been a bit of a struggle for them. But other than that, they're doing well. So all of this happens. I'll link to the video. If you haven't seen it, it'll break your heart. It's one of the few things that actually shocked me in the past few years here. Anyway, over on Fox News, one of their contributors, Juanita Williams, told the panel, well, here's what he said about these two girls. After watching the video that all of us saw, Juanita Williams said, I don't think they intended to kill anybody. They were looking to have a joyride. It went way wrong, way out of control, and ended up in a gross tragedy. Unquote. That's Juanita Williams. Resident liberal homosexualist contributor to Fox News. Why? Because Fox News loves people like this. They always have to put the deviants on alongside the transgendered looking sluts and tramps they have on. And then other seemingly normal looking men who lack masculinity is the only thing they all lack. Oh, now. So I'm on the Nextdoor app. Have you done this app, Nextdoor? It's where all of your leftist neighbors go to post leftist propaganda. It's really bizarre. And Lost Dogs. Lost Dogs and Chinese Communist Party talking points are what you get on Nextdoor. So I get a notification on Nextdoor. One of my neighbors is talking about her Korean daughter-in-law who's scared because everybody's scowling at her and she's afraid of the anti-Asian sentiment that's rising. And she writes this post, and I read the post, and I'm thinking, okay. I type back to my leftist, it's probably someone in Beijing, you know, claims they live two doors down, but they're probably right out of the Chinese, the CAC at the CCP there. And I said, how does your Korean daughter-in-law know people are scowling at her? Everybody wears a mask. I think you're lying. I think you're just trying to build up racial animosity where none really existed until you had to open your fat yap and lie to us about your non-existent Korean daughter-in-law. So I pretty much accused her and stood around. And then there were an avalanche of responses, none of which I read, because I could care less what these people think. Because it's obviously not true, so why should I even respond? And I don't really care about what my neighbors have to yell and scream at each other about this obviously fake story. But meanwhile, we go to the white supremacy file. Uh-huh, I said the white supremacy file. To report, this is from the New York Post. Brandon Elliott lives in a hotel that serves as a homeless shelter. He was caught on video mercilessly punching and kicking a 65-year-old Asian woman at about 11 o'clock in the morning last Monday, and he screamed things at her that I can't say on the air because they're so vulgar. By the way, this fella, Brandon Elliott, caught on video beating this 65-year-old Asian woman up for no apparent reason. I mean, how could you have a reason to beat a 65-year-old woman? There could be no reason. Brandon Elliott was charged in 2002 with using a kitchen knife to stab his mother, to death. Wow. He was charged with murder. He killed his mother in front of his 5-year-old sister in 2002. It's unclear what led to the slaying. But we're pretty sure it had something to do with the knife he had. That we're pretty sure. He was convicted of murdering his own mother and was sentenced to just 15 years in prison and got out. And then beat an Asian woman. Did I mention he's black? Oh, I'm sorry. This is from the white supremacy file. I'm not sure how that happened. You know, it really wouldn't matter so much that this guy is black. Because whether you're black, white, yellow, brown, whatever, you stab your mother to death, well, you should be executed. You beat on a 65-year-old Asian woman, you should be put to death. Punching and kicking a 65-year-old person, that's attempted murder. You should be put to death for that. Whether you're black, white, or brown. But the only reason this made it into the white supremacy file is because of the obvious conspiracy of the leftist media to insinuate that white supremacists are beating up Asian women, which is ludicrous. I hang out with an Asian woman all the time. Have you been feeling the rising tide of white supremacist hatred toward you?
No, I haven't felt it.
She hasn't felt it. That's because it doesn't exist. And besides, what are we all worried about? Everything's going back to normal. It's going to be fine. meanwhile, should I even go to the justice file? One time for the justice file. Morris Lester Hall was in the car with George Floyd on the day George Floyd died. That's right. And in an interview with the New York Times shortly after the incident, he boasted, "I'm a key witness to the cops murdering George Floyd. They're going to want to know my side of the story and everything I've been through. This is not about me. This is about my brother, George Floyd." unquote. Mr. Maurice Lester Hall had outstanding felony warrants at the time George Floyd found himself in a position to pass away there. And at the time, he gave a false name to the police, and then he left the city 2 days after George Floyd, his brother, died. By the way, he said he had an extremely close relationship with George Floyd, and that's why he gave a false name and fled the state. And now, he has decided not to testify. Even though everybody wants to know his side of the story and everything that's happened to him, we know it's not all about him. It's all about our brother George Floyd. And Stow, he's basically going to plead the fifth, and he's not going to testify. He has refused to testify in the trial of Officer Derek Chauvin. And apparently he's not going to get up on the stand and say all the stuff that he said to the New York Times. Where he claims that George Floyd never resisted arrest, didn't know anything about any drugs, everything was good, we were on our way to a Bible study, essentially I'm going to claim I am going to invoke my Fifth Amendment protections. And I'm your host, Doug McBurn. It's all I could do just not to let that whole thing play. Because, I mean, that makes sense. That I can relate to. But other things I cannot relate to. For example, we went to a hot dog stand. Everything's going back to normal. It's going to be fine. So we went to a hot dog stand where we ordered hot dogs. We went into the brick and mortar storefront and talked to the young lady and ordered hot dogs. And we were not wearing masks. Now, she was wearing a mask. And she had something that looked like electrical tape over her eyes that I found out later were eyebrows. And that's some sort of fashion now. To have eyebrows tattooed on your face that are bright and shiny like electrical tape. She had that. And we ordered our hot dogs and we were given a receipt with a number on it and we were told that our number would be called. So everything seems normal right now, as so far, right? I mean, except the mask. Oh, and the fact that she was surrounded by plexiglass. Protective dividers to the front and one to her right to protect her from the sputum and the spittle and the germs and the infestation that is every customer that enters her hot dog stand. All a bunch of infectious, disgusting, foul, vile, horribly terrifying people. We took our number and we took our receipt and we walked back outside into the sunshine to wait for our number to be called. And then our number was called. And I stepped back into the storefront to the woman's right, just beyond the protective plexiglass barrier and apparently some sort of radar device either in her mind or there at the counter went off. And she said, "Sir, do you have a mask?" And I wanted to say, I don't have a mask, but I need some electrical tape. Can I grab one of your eyebrows? One of my stereo speaker on the car needs a... Anyway, but I didn't say that. I just said, you know, my mask stopped working and I had to throw it away. I hope yours is still working. And she said, "Sir, can you stand behind the plexiglass?" That's what she said to me. Can you stand behind the plexiglass? So had she just chuckled at my joke, I would have taken out my mask that I have curled up in my pocket, the filthy, disgusting one that I keep, and I would have put it on just to satisfy her. I don't want to scare people, these poor children who are terrified. Anyway, but she didn't laugh. She told me, "Stand behind the plexiglass, please, sir." Which I dutifully stepped behind the plexiglass, and she asked me if I wanted sauce, and that by now I'm keeping my eye on the hot dogs. Because I can tell she's already not friendly. Now, fortunately, she's wearing a mask, so I know she can't spit in my hot dogs. So I feel a little bit of liberty to be creative. And she said, "Do you want any sauce?" And I said, "I do not want sauce. I want only ketchup. Would you like it on the hot dogs or on the side?" I said, "On the side, please." So she put packets of ketchup in the box with the hot dogs. She closed the box, and then she attempted to hand the box to me around the plexiglass, at which point I shrunk back and put my hands up, and I said, "No, no, just leave it there on the counter. Just leave it there. Thank you. I feel much more comfortable that way." And then I erupted in laughter at her, mocking laughter at her utter stupidity and cowardice, having at that point secured the foodstuffs and knowing that she had not corrupted them with any bodily fluids. And so that was my, everything's going back to normal. It's going to be fine. Just stand behind the plexiglass. All right. Meanwhile, from the war file... Three police officers in Chicago were shot in 1 week at the end of March. I don't want to go into the details, but just Easter weekend, Saturday into Sunday in Chicago, like a dozen people shot. Over Easter, I mean, Saturday into Sunday, Easter weekend, really? But that's... So things are returning to normal, and everything's going to be fine. Just ask the guy who founded the Texas Roadhouse. Oh, no, we can't ask him. No, because he finds himself in the urinalism file this week, where the yahoo.com/news... What is that? yahoo.com/news. I think that's the Associated Press, actually. They report that the Texas Roadhouse founder died by suicide. He died by suicide, meaning he killed himself. Why? He suffered from tinnitus. That's a ringing in the ears. And so he had a ringing in his ears, and at some point, and he decided to just kill himself, which he did. Let's see. The company issued a somewhat astonishing release. Of course, you know this. Anyway, Kent always found a silver lining to help others. Okay. Well, he suffered from ringing in the ears and he shot himself. So how can you say that he always found a silver lining? I think that last time he didn't. But anyway, that's what we... he had funded a clinical study to help members of the military who suffered with tinnitus, the ringing in the ears. And I mean, we all have physical issues that we suffer with, right? And as we get older, they get worse and worse. To where I've had conversations with some of my friends where they're like, you know what? I'm not so scared of dying anymore. I'm kind of getting ready for it. Everything hurts. It's hard to get around. It's, you know, it's somewhat embarrassing and humiliating to have your body break down to this level, right? Well, but you don't kill yourself, right? But this guy ringing in the ears, he kills himself. Okay. So anyway, there used to be a stigma against suicide. There's not anymore. And so more and more people will kill themselves. You know, you're uncomfortable. Well, one of the options could be to just blow your brains out. Meanwhile, from the justice file in Madawaska, Maine, Madawaska, I said, about 6 o'clock in the evening on March 22nd, Logan Fontaine found that his car was gone. His black Ford Edge. Listen to how this is from the local newspaper. His black Ford Edge was taken from where it was parked. Well, it was actually stolen.
Yeah.
I mean, had he driven it away, you could say it was taken. But it was stolen, is what happened. Anyway, and what's interesting about this story is that he had stopped at a police station to report what he believed to be a stolen bicycle. So he stops at the police station to report a stolen bicycle, leaves his car idling. Why? Because it's freezing. And then his car is stolen from in front of the police station while he's reporting a bike theft. He says the car was undamaged, though it smelled heavily of cigarette smoke. I think that's damage. That's really hard to get out. You know, if you got cloth seats, I mean, forget about it. Anyway, the urinalist who writes the story here at the fiddleheadfocus.com, that's Fiddlehead Focus is the local paper there in Maine, where they all have such quaint names for everything as they circle the drain down into the depths of hell there in Maine. The urinalist at the Fiddlehead Focus reminds us that the car was running at the time of the theft. Because now we know that, obviously, it's Logan Fontaine's fault. Who did he think he was leaving his car running? In front of a police station, of all things. Mr. Fontaine said to the reporters at the Fiddlehead Focus that I've never had an issue leaving my car running in Madawaska before. But things are getting back to normal now. So, you know. Remember where we were before COVID? We were getting to the point where we couldn't behave like civilized people anymore because of the rampant crime spree that's going on all the time. Can't leave your car running. It's against the law now. That was normal. So welcome back. Welcome back, normal. From the personhood file. The Federalist reports that late one night in July 2015, District Judge William Orrick of San Francisco blocked the release of undercover video of the National Abortion Federation convention showing Planned Parenthood negotiating the sale of aborted baby body parts. After nearly 6 years now, more than 200 hours of that footage has yet to be seen by the public. We've seen some of these videos, right? You haven't seen hardly any of it. David DeLeiden and the Center for Medical Progress recorded the undercover videos. And this judge was put in charge of persecuting David DeLeiden and the Center for Medical Progress. Or This particular judge, by the way, William Arick, helped open a Planned Parenthood clinic. He helped open it, funding, all of that. Yeah, through, he was a longtime donor to San Francisco's Good Samaritan Family Resource Center that opened a, right? I mean, talk about a bizarre, anyway, an Orwellian weirdness to all of this. Anyway, that particular clinic that the judge opened was one of them that sold fetal tissue for profit. Oryk's wife, the judge's wife, liked social media posts calling Dalyden a domestic terrorist. And Dalyden tried to get this judge removed because of the judge's obvious bias, but the judge refused to step down, refused to disclose his relationship with Planned Parenthood. And 6 years later, Dalyden's still fighting both Planned Parenthood and the National Abortion Federation. Because this judge is being allowed to basically persecute this guy. It's shocking. But, you know, I believe that, I remember when these videos first came out, and I had friends of mine who are against killing babies. I have friends like that. They're against killing babies, stomping on puppies, drowning kittens. They're against things like that. Doesn't mean they're such great people, but, you know, they don't do things like that. Anyway, they thought that these videos were going to finally wake everybody up. And I said, dude, don't you remember the silent scream? That was the 1980s. And that was the first deplatforming of a video. There was one airing of that video and the entire ruling leftist world freaked out. It showed what an abortion was. It showed an actual live abortion in real time, the whole thing. And it showed the baby. And the silent scream. It's a shocking, horrifying thing to watch. Anyway, that was deplatformed in the 80s. And that was the harbinger of the leftist Marxist takedown of America. When that was allowed to be deplatformed back in the 1980s. When that video didn't wake America up and shake us into stopping with the killing of innocent children. When that failed to pierce the hearts of the people, that was the harbinger when the ever-present forces of darkness knew that America was ripe for the takedown. And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Go on, boys. Get on with it. Go. That you know where you're going. It's going to be rough. You're going to get what you deserve. Yeah. From the Highway to Hell file, President Joe Biden displayed the transgender flag at the White House last week. I didn't know there was a transgender flag. It is pastel pink and blue. Let's see, the White House Director of Political Strategy and Outreach. What is that? Talk about a patronage job. This is probably one of the women who has credible accusations of molestation against him. And so he hired her as the Director of Political Strategy and Outreach, Emmy. Emmy Ruiz, she announced that the flag would be flying. She said, imagine being a trans kid and feeling seen, and not just seen, but loved and cared for by the highest office in the land. Imagine. Biden also released a statement that he didn't write, but he did release it. And it goes something like this. Transgender Day of Visibility recognizes the generations of struggle and courage has brought our country closer to full equality. Unquote. That was President Biden. The president recognized the trailblazing and hard-fought efforts of transgendered people to live openly and authentically. I'm sorry, translate. To live openly and authentically. So authentic now means denying your sex. I mean, is this not Orwell upside down backwards and black is white and white and black and left is left and right is left is right and what in the world is going on? That's not authentic. It's the opposite of authentic. Authentic means real. Okay, but that's where we are. But it's okay. This is, we're back to normal now. Normal is insane. This is a hard-fought progress into increasingly accepting, standing in support and solidarity with the transgender community. Biden went on to warn of ongoing violence and systemic I can't even say it. Biden warned of ongoing violence and systemic barriers affecting the trans. Okay. Yes, he says there's a crisis of violence against transgendered women of color, and it's a stain on our nation's conscience, says Joe Biden. Joe Biden is not even conscious, and he's commenting on the stain on our conscience, but he's unconscious. And transgender women of color, okay. Biden went on. Vice President Harris and I affirm that transgender Americans make our nation more prosperous, and I urge my fellow Americans on uplifting the worth and dignity of every transgender person. Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you for clarifying the stain upon our national conscience and helping us to ameliorate the guilt we've had for all of the transgendered women of color that we've beaten and robbed and killed. We're so sorry. Now we go to the They're Not All Heroes file, where, if you remember, the Washington Examiner reminds us that Barack Obama, back in 2016, he allowed trannies into the military. Do you all remember that? Well, I freaked out about it. I said, this is crazy insanity. This is treason. He's undermining the country. We'll never survive this. And here we are just a few short years later in the midst of never surviving this. Anyway, 2016, he puts trannies in. 2000, whenever Trump comes in and then acts like he's going to do something, but he lets the trannies stay. Somehow Trump convinces the gullible evangelicals that he reversed the policy, but trannies were allowed to remain in the military, which is, I mean, say what you want about Donald Trump. He had a gift for bamboozling gullible evangelicals, that's for sure. Now Joe Biden rides in and he's restoring the Obama policy. I'm going to restore the Obama policy. This is a transgender military. Stumbling and stuttering his way through. Not only is he restoring the trannies to the military, he's expanding it. Now he's going to pay for what the Washington Examiner calls expensive gender reassignment surgery. This Joe Biden's pushing it too far. These transgendered surgeries are expensive. He wants us to pay for. You know, you could have used a number, any number of adjectives to describe gender reassignment surgery over there at the Washington Examiner. The urinalist could have used demented, immoral, abusive, insane, criminally insane. They could have used any number of adjectives to describe gender reassignment surgery in the military, of all things, but instead they chose expensive. The Pentagon declined to comment because it's a building and it doesn't talk. But people there didn't want to talk about how unit cohesion might be affected. Why? They're citing ongoing litigation. So, well, there's a clue right there about unit cohesion. Well, we can't talk about this because of the lawsuits. I'm sure unit cohesion will be fine, though. Unbelievable. The director of Ascension Policy, Stephanie. Hi, I'm Stephanie. I'm at the DOD, and I'm the director of Ascension Policy. Let's see. She was tapped to be the person comment on this. She was asked about unit cohesion and decided instead to comment on the holistic support and flexibility available to transgender service members. Hi, I'm Stephanie, and I'm a warfighter. Yay! It all starts with working with the medical provider and receiving the diagnosis of gender dysphoria for our warfighting partners and service members. Then, the medical provider or a team then designs a medical transition treatment plan for our warfighters, our heroes, yay! And that usually includes, by the way, the primary care provider, an endocrinologist, a surgical specialist, and even case managers. We have wonderful teams that are led by regional chairs across the Defense Department and major military treatment facilities. They really specialize in this. And they are prepared to work with service members to help them have a successful transition. Yay! Not from sergeant to staff sergeant. No, from he to she. Forget from major to lieutenant colonel. You can go from him to her. Or they. Or she. We're warfighters. So then we design a plan and we make sure, always making sure that they're looking at the timing of different interventions, whether or not there needs to be an adjustment to any of the help and support that the service member needs. And we also support their unit, and then the command supports the individual as they affect that transition. You know, it's like when you have to add another stripe on your sleeve when you get the thing, you know? It's like that, you know, except with sexual organs. It's like that. That is Stephanie, warfighter. The Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin declared himself transgendered at a new... Oh, I'm sorry, I misread that. He declared his support for transitioning mentally defective soldiers who somehow think that they're now women, or vice versa. The writers at the Washington Examiner remind us that Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin is a commander with 3 decades of experience. 3 decades. So let's go back 3 decades with us. Come on in the Wayback Machine. Let's go all the way back. That would have been 1991. Right? That's when now Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin entered the service. And that's right about the time when Bill Clinton allowed the homos in. That would have been 1993. So while Lloyd Austin was still green and wet behind the ears, the homos came in. And at the time, Lloyd Austin thought he might be uncomfortable with it, but it turns out he's okay with it. And it didn't harm our military at all. Look at all the wars we've won since 1991. Look at, yeah. Look at all the wars we've won. meanwhile, from the Modern Caligula file, Chuck Schumer plans to decriminalize marijuana on a national level. He's going to expunge the criminal records of everyone who was ever arrested, and then he's going to regulate and tax marijuana. Jen Psaki was asked what Joe Biden thought, and she said that, it's odd how she answered this question. So she's asked, does the president support the decriminalization of marijuana? And she said, the president's position hasn't changed. He supports decriminalization. Now, why couldn't she just say he supports decriminalization? Why did she have to say that the president's position hasn't changed? Why all the extra words, Jen? I know why. It's because there's a certain allotted time, and she's just trying to fill it up with as many words as she can so she can avoid saying anything of any import, anything that really matters. Anyway, Andrew Cuomo has signed off on legalization there in the state of New York, where, he was asked why he did it. Am I reading this right? The governor said, for too long, the prohibition of cannabis disproportionately targeted communities of color with harsh prison sentences after years of hard work. And our goal now is to provide justice for long marginalized communities, embrace a new industry that will grow the economy and establish substantial safety for the public, is what we're doing here with the legalization of the drugs and all of that. Yes, what we're doing. All right. From the wives, I don't want to do that. I'm so sick of talking about COVID. Anyway, I'll link to this article, though, I think. There's a great World Net Daily article about the medical community and their shameless behavior on COVID. And just all the horrible things that have happened due to the lockdowns. The medical profession, almost everyone in the medical profession, should be ashamed of themselves and driven out of the industry and forced to live in shopping carts under bridges. I mean, there's a few brave doctors who've stood up and said this is all insane, but the vast majority of the medical community has gone along with this insanity, and they should all suffer loss. I'll just leave it at that. I'll link to that article, but I don't want to talk too much more about it because I'm sick of the whole thing. But I have to talk about it. From the Scared New World file, Summit News reports that Andreas Kluth, who is of some European genius, says that new variants of COVID-19 mean the pandemic will be permanent. We are entering an endless cycle of restrictions, says Andreas Kluth. He says the idea that the world will at some point go back to normal is almost certainly wrong, he says. SARS-CoV-2 will become our permanent enemy like the flu, but worse. But wait a second. We never did with this with the flu, Mr. Kluth. But that doesn't matter because we've cast aside everything we ever knew about anything, and we're launching headlong into just total insanity. Fear and cowardice over a cold bug that's it's bad, but whatever. New variants that behave almost like new viruses, he says, is what we need to be worried about. He says we may never achieve herd immunity because vaccines are powerless against the coming mutations. Oh, no. Please stand behind the plexiglass. whoever this guy is, Andreas Kluth, do they ever give what are this guy's bona fides? Why am I listening to this guy? I don't know. Anyway, Summit News reminds us he's not the first to suggest that this pandemic won't end. In his book, The Great Reset, World Economic Forum, whatever, Klaus Schwab asserts that the world will never return to normal. A senior U.S. Army official also said that mask wearing and social distancing will become permanent. CNN's international security editor, Nick, asserted that mandatory wearing of masks will become permanent. It will be just a part of life, says Nick over at CNN. It should just be a part of life, you know? Mary Ramsey, head of immunization at Public Health England, says that restrictions will remain in place, obviously, for years. But no, it's good. It's cool. Everything's settling back down into normal. So do I even want to do this? I don't even know if I want to talk about this. From LifeSite News, there's a doctor. Off the reservation. Dr. Michael Yaden, former vice president and chief science officer at Pfizer. That's Pfizer. You've probably heard of him. He's concerned that the vaccination program is going to be used for massive depopulation. And so I don't know. I shouldn't say friends because I don't really have any friends outside of like three, four people. My acquaintances in the medical community are all calling and telling me how proud they are that they're vaccinated. Which, I don't know, you got a shot? Wow, that's, you're a great American, I guess. So, okay, you're vaccinated, I guess. Are you still female? I don't know. Anyway, it's like, you know, I have this fungal infection on my calf. I can tell you about that. You know, I started out with a regular clindamycin, but now they switched me over to a more power. I'm on an antibiotic and an antifungal. Come on, let's talk about it. Tell me about your shot. I'm so moved. I want to know. Anyway, Dr. Michael Yeadon, Y-E-A-D-O-N. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but he says that he feels like he's... Well, listen to what he says. He says, I'm well aware of global crimes against humanity being perpetrated against a large proportion of the world's population. I feel great fear, and I have absolutely no doubt, says Michael Yeadon, that we are in the presence of evil. He says authorities are bent on administering vaccines to as many in the population as they can. This is madness, says Michael Yeadon, former VP, chief science officer at Pfizer. He says this is madness. He says protection is needed only by those at notably elevated risk of death from the virus. He said other people don't perish from this virus. He said it's wholly unethical to administer something novel and for which the potential for unwanted effects after a few months is completely uncharacterized. So you're giving an experimental vaccine to everybody, the vast majority of people who don't need it. And he's saying that's unethical. And he's right. He says in no other era would it be wise to do this. He says we have to inquire then, what is the motivation? Why does everybody need the vaccine? Have we just all forgotten that this is an experimental vaccine that was rushed through in less than a year? Oh, that's right. We've forgotten everything we ever knew. So we can forget that too. And let's just move on. So Dr. Yeadon asks, what is the motivation? He says, I don't know. I have theoretical answers. Only one of which relates to money, and that motive doesn't work. Because if their motivation was money, they could arrive at the same amount of money by just doubling the cost and giving the vaccination to half the population. So it's obviously not money. They want to vaccinate every single person. So he says it's got to be something else. He said, I know for a fact that it is intended that minor children and eventually babies are to be included in this vaccination effort. And he said, that's what I interpret to be an evil act. He said, there is no medical rationale for it. These vaccines result in the expression of the actual spike protein, which has adverse biological effects. And those not at risk from the virus should not be exposed to that risk. It's just unethical. It's madness, he says. But the rush for vaccination, I mean, I hope they don't make it mandatory, but I don't see anything that stops that. Is there anything else that I really don't want to do? Okay, let's do, I'll do two more mask things and then we'll quit because I can't take it anymore. The Wisconsin Supreme Court struck down the governor's mask mandate last week, claiming that his emergency orders were unlawful. They said his order didn't meet the requirements of a statute governing what an emergency is. So the Supreme Court in Wisconsin just woke up after a year and said, oh, we think the emergency might be over. It's been a year, for crying out loud. The governor declared an emergency on March 12th, 2020. And then the legislature never extended it, but everybody just continued to go along. And so there we are. So there, in Wisconsin, they've decided that perhaps the emergency is passed. And so down in Florida, we've got Chris Nelson. He plans to celebrate from the Widespread Tyranny File. Chris says he's invited people to gather on April 10th at 3 o'clock at the corner of the A1A and Los Olas Avenue to mark 1 year of mask tyranny in Broward County, Florida. His gathering will feature prizes and a mask burning. If there was ever a reason to get on a plane and go to Florida, this is it, to go to a mask burning. Well, I may have a mask burning in solidarity with him. When is this? April 10th? Let me check my calendar. I could probably make time to burn some masks. When Breitbart asked why he's organizing this, here's what Chris said. We have these radical communist mayors that are drunk on power because they're living under a never-ending state of emergency. He then urged Governor DeSantis to end Florida's state of emergency, which reminded me that Governor DeSantis still hasn't ended it. And he's everybody's hope. He could be the next president. What a great guy. Well, guess what? He's one of them. He did it, too. He's still doing it. And then Mr. Chris Nelson, who I nominate to be governor of Florida, right after he burns the masks, take him down the state house, throw Ron DeSantis into the ocean, and put Chris Nelson up there. He says, finally, we have communist psychopaths in our government, and they're using a state of emergency as an excuse to stay in their state of emergency. They're using the governor's state of emergency to stay in their state of emergency forever. And they are psychopathic, tyrannical, drunk on power, communists. I like it. All right, so March 10th, let's all burn a mask together, at least one. He got permits and everything to do it. But he's going to burn his masks in full compliance with the government there. So if you're going to burn your masks, you got to get a permit. I got a story about that I could tell someday, but that'll be for another show. In the meantime, I want to thank my friends at American Right to Life, at Real Science Radio, and at the Personhood Alliance and my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studios, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.